Do you often get anxious and find that it can have a significant impact on you and your relationships? If so, stay tuned because today we're talking about anxiety and the effect anxiety can have on your relationships and what you can do about it. And if you'd like to find out more about this show, head over to our website specifically for the podcast, therelationshipmazepodcast.com, and please press subscribe now so you don't miss an episode. We also have more information on our website, therelationshipmaze.com, where we have our online course and lots of free resources that you can download. Welcome to today's episode, and today we're talking about anxiety and the impact anxiety can have on you and on your relationships.
Okay, so anxiety is something that we all experience some of the time, some of us a little bit more often than others, but there's a very clear definition of what constitutes generalized anxiety disorder in the clinical term, which we're going to start off with today. Just to start off with some definition of what we are talking about today.
Yeah, so I'm going to just read out the clinical definition first of all. So this is referring to something called generalized anxiety disorder, and that's where somebody I have anxiety about a range of different things, not one specific thing. Because, as Angela said, it's quite natural to have anxiety about one thing. I mean, you know, if you've got a presentation coming up next week, or you've got something really kind of significant, it's natural to have some anxiety about that.
Mm. Oh, if you go to the dentist, I always come back to that. That's my primary example. Then, if you are like me, you're going to be really anxious about that.
Yeah, and everyone's individual. So, again, some people will, some people won't. I mean, yeah. I actually met somebody who liked going to the dentist, which was kind of odd. They clearly haven't seen The Marathon Man.
God, yeah.
So, let's talk. I'm just going to go through the criteria, the official criteria for diagnosing generalized anxiety disorder. Mm. So first of all, it's the presence of excessive anxiety and worry about a variety of topics, events and activities. So that's really not just one, it's a variety of different things. And worry occurs more often than not for at least 6 months and is clearly excessive. Mm. The second criteria is the worry is experienced as very challenging to control. Mm. So the worry in both adults and children may easily shift from one topic to another. So it might jump from topic to topic. The anxiety and worry are accompanied by at least three of the following physical or cognitive symptoms. In children, only one is necessary for a diagnosis. So it's edginess or restlessness, tiring easily, so more fatigued than usual, impaired concentration or feeling as though the mind goes blank, irritability, increased muscle aches or soreness, and difficulty sleeping or trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. So quite a few different things here. And remember as well, just because you have one of these things, it doesn't mean that you have anxiety disorder.
No.
Yeah, so don't get anxious about listening to that and thinking, oh, maybe I've got generalized anxiety disorder.
Because I think it's actually quite difficult to define anxiety, isn't it? And to kind of define at what point does it become too much, so to speak. I think I would take this sort of with a pinch of salt. It's quite helpful to think about generalized anxiety disorder as a disorder, so to speak, if you follow these kind of criteria. But there might also be a constant sense of worry and anxiety that you have, which might not last quite that frequently, but which is still of concern to you and, of course, to all of the people around you and your partner specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just think, actually, you know, anxiety is completely natural because if we think about, you know, where we've evolved and hundreds of years ago where we didn't have houses, we might have been kind of living in caves, you know, to be anxious was life-saving. Yeah. You know, if we're sitting around by a campfire and, you know, we suddenly hear a noise in a distance of kind of like a rumbling noise, we're not going to just sit there and relax and think, well, that's an interesting sound. It's more, you know, is that potentially a threat?
Yeah.
In fact, you know, it would be quite natural to think that anything potentially would be a threat. Mm. So hundreds of years ago, we've evolved to actually be aware of potential for danger.
Yeah, and that's, and that old part of our brain we still have with us, we carry with us. So whenever there's anything that kind of makes us concerned for our well-being, that makes us threatened in any shape or form, whether it's a saber-toothed tiger, a bus coming at us, or indeed a presentation that you mentioned earlier on, all of these will mobilize our system and we start to feel like our survival instinct kicks in and we start to run away, metaphorically or physically.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not even real things that are going to happen, things we then think might happen.
Mm.
So that's the difference, is from those days where there are real physical threats, now those threats become things like, well, did I pay that bill? If I haven't, then what's going to happen? Is my house going to be repossessed? Or, you know, so we start kind of creating things in our mind that are likely maybe never to happen.
Absolutely. So it's a perceived threat rather than a real threat.
Yeah. And I think that's the important distinction, is anxiety is usually due to a perceived threat.
Yeah. And what we wanted to focus on, I mean, anxiety can take many shapes or forms. You know, it can take the form, for example, of social anxiety, obsessive thoughts and behaviours. So there are many different forms of anxiety. What we really want to focus on today is the sort of more generalised version of it.
Yeah.
This sort of amorphous anxiety that kind of seeps in, this sense that you have all of the time of some sense of discomfort or being on edge, or, you know, all of these kind of, this sense of that you're never quite safe in this world.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, let's talk about some of the symptoms you might experience of anxiety. So, you know, to think about those symptoms, well, one thing to do might be, well, Angie said, I think you're going to the dentist quite soon. So now, when you think about going to the dentist, what happens in your body?
Well, I start to feel this really horrible tension here in my, usually always in my stomach, this kind of butterfly experience. I start to feel a little bit more lightheaded. I might even get a bit of a headache if I think too much about it. I start to feel possibly a little bit dizzy and nauseous with it, just at the thought. If I just imagine that drill coming towards me, I notice my heart actually beating a lot faster, so I get these sort of palpitations going. So I have a whole host of physical symptoms when I think about the dentist. And of course, I have a lot of thoughts to go with that as well. It's like, oh, am I going to feel really sick there? Am I going to faint? Because I have previously fainted, believe it or not, having gone to the dentist. Am I going to faint? Am I going to be, what else do I worry about? Is it going to be painful? Is it going to take a long time? All of these things. So lots and lots of thoughts. So thoughts, lots of stuff going on up here in my head. And lots of stuff happening in my body.
Yeah, so it's a body and mind experience.
Mm.
So we experience those thoughts and we have the sensations that go with it. Mm. And that can affect us in so many different ways. Some of those symptoms Angela talked about. Mm. We talked previously about the fight or flight response, and many of those symptoms of anxiety are very similar to that.
Yeah.
What tends to be different is we have more of the thoughts with anxiety, because again, it's usually that perceived threat.
Mm.
So it's what we kind of create in our minds as well that increases the level of anxiety.
Yeah, so we tend to overinterpret with anxiety. We tend to sort of maximize and blow out of proportion, so to speak, and catastrophize usually as well. So it's this idea that something that in and of itself might not be so bad, or might not be so terrifying, becomes bigger and bigger and bigger in our mind. So it sort of gets distorted in the anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. And how, you know, it can affect us in so many ways. The problem with anxiety is, you know, we're worried about that presentation. So, you know, if you've got something coming up over the next couple of weeks, just for a moment, think about something that might be making you feeling anxious.
Mm.
You know, like a presentation. And the challenge is, you get anxious about it. And maybe you think, when your mind, you picture people laughing at you or people yawning or kind of imagining yourself, you know, those dreams where you kind of imagine that you suddenly realize you're naked on stage. So it's those sort of things where, you know, even in your dreams, you get anxiety about the thing.
Yeah.
But so when you think about that, notice how it makes you feel. And one of the challenges is you start getting more and more anxious about it. So when it comes to the event, it affects your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't perform in the way that you want to, because that anxiety can get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can channel that anxiety in different ways and it actually helps them.
Mm-hmm.
But for many people, and probably say most people, the anxiety usually gets in the way of their performance. Like, take for example, I originally was a professional violinist. When I'd be in a room practicing, I could do lots of things that I thought sounded quite good, and probably other people would think sounded good if they heard it. But as soon as I went on stage and started to think, oh, I can't remember how you play this, or I remember X, Y, or Z, or whatever was going through my mind, suddenly my performance suffered dramatically.
Yeah.
And I could never kind of play on stage the same way that I would when I was just practicing in a room.
So the head gets in the way, yeah? So
the head gets in the way and the body, because the head gets in the way with these thoughts about what might go wrong, which has this effect on the body with some of that fight or flight response.
Mm.
You get the adrenaline flowing through the system, and also it can affect with something that's very precise, like playing the violin, it can affect sort of little shakes in the arm.
Absolutely.
Little finger movement where you have to very precise movement.
Yeah, because your body starts to mobilize. It starts to mobilize for running away because that's what you want to do. Something threatens you. A situation is threatening for you. You want to get away from it. So these are all the symptoms. That's why, you know, the heart is racing faster, etc. It's our biological system that kicks in that makes us able to run away from this perceived danger.
Yeah.
And just one other thing, so I was just thinking another aspect of anxiety is frequently that there's this fear of the fear element to it, that if you do very frequently have these encounters, if you always worry about, you know, going on stage playing the violin, if you know that that's what's going to happen, or if you're always worried about going to the dentist, you already have then a fear of having that horrible sinking fear, yeah, the fear of the anxiety. So it becomes sort of magnified and it develops this kind of cycle that is quite difficult to break sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is what the essence of a panic attack can be as well, because you don't just have a panic. Panic attack is not just a physical thing.
No.
It's because you get the panic about potentially your heart stopping or kind of being out of control. And it's that fear of the fear that can cycle out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's just briefly talk about as well, you know, the effect in relationships. Mm. So it can affect you at work. But, you know, with this podcast, we focus on relationships and, you know, have a think about in the past, has anxiety ever affected your relationships? Well, you know, certainly in terms of if we worry about a lot of things and we express those worries constantly, how does your partner handle it?
Mm. Because, what happens when you have it in the system? If you think about you, the couple, as a system, if there's something in the system, it's going to impact both of you. So it starts might start with one of you, but it also has an impact on the other. So what's it like? What's it like being in a relationship with a partner who is highly anxious, who's worried all the time? Can be very challenging, can be quite overwhelming. And towards the end of the podcast, we just sort of wanted to briefly talk about, you know, what to kind of consider here for you as a couple when there is anxiety in the system. And of course, the more there is, also it might be that you are in a relationship with a partner who is also anxious. It might be both of you. That can create quite a volatile system sometimes when there's, you know, imagine two of you having pounding hearts all the time, racing thoughts in your head. It means that neither of you can be very present for the other in the relationship because you're so wrapped up in your concerns all of the time.
Yeah, and you can't be present yourself, so you can't really enjoy that relationship because you're just thinking about what might happen in the future or worrying about the past as well. So it's kind of, you know, there's these two sides of it. So whatever happens, even if it's just one of you, you're not going to be present in that relationship. So it's not going to be as fulfilling as possible. To have a fulfilling relationship, we need to be present in that relationship. Now, of course, there's times when we think about the future or think about the past, but that's where, you know, when it's appropriate.
Yeah.
But if we're constantly doing that, you're not able to be present. And that's really, I think, key for a fulfilling relationship is being present. And, you know, if it affects us in terms of our enjoyment, our happiness, our conversation, our communication. There's dangers of even having a codependent relationship to some extent where, you know, one person becomes that kind of person that you're always relying on. You know, takes all these concerns, you're always worrying that essentially that's the person that is your outlet for all of this.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, in terms of other sides of relationships like sexual performance. Well, again, a common thing with problems in sex life is to do with anxiety.
And focus on performance.
Yeah, exactly.
The anxiety is all about them. Am I going to perform? So
just
sort of, for example, just sort of rethinking that idea about this is not about performance, but enjoyment might lessen the anxiety. So there are different ways of going about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
There's another thought that I had, but it's just gone now. It will come to me later. No doubt. It's just gone. Okay. So, what we also thought might be quite helpful for you just to we sort of briefly consider the various different approaches that you can take towards anxiety, because they're in terms of the therapeutic approaches, they're very different ways of working with anxiety. And it's largely really concerned with whether we're looking more at the causes of anxiety or whether we're looking more at the effects of anxiety. Some approaches are more focused on causes. So if you're looking at psychodynamic theories, for example, they're very interested in looking at where is this anxiety coming from? What's the root cause of it? Is it, for example, that as a child, you had an experience in your upbringing where you didn't learn to feel very safe in the world because your parents didn't care for you appropriately, maybe not in all shapes or forms, but in some ways there was an element of not kind of being able to soothe you appropriately when you were distressed as a child. Now, if you sort of carry that forward into your adult relationships, if you're always concerned that nobody's ultimately going to, ultimately there for you, or if you think that nobody's ultimately going to be there for you, that in itself might create a bit of anxiety, not just a bit, quite a lot of anxiety about the world that you're living in and your relationships. So it can create relationships where you are, where you're never quite trusting of the other person, for example. So that would be one way of approaching anxiety, kind of looking a little bit more at, you know, what happened here? Where is this coming from? Because if somebody had a very secure upbringing, so to speak, they're more likely to have more resilience maybe in their life. They might not have the same sort of shaky ground, so to speak, foundations to start from. Having said that, it doesn't mean that anxiety is some, you know, that just that is all down to what happened in the past, because you can also have recent experiences. For example, you might have lost your job, which creates a lot of stress in your system. You might have had a bereavement, for example. All of these are sort of recent events that might cause the anxiety as well.
Although I would argue that like if you've had a recently had a job that you lost, well, that's still in the past. It's just not in the long past.
Right. Okay.
So really, you know, I think anxiety, really, our response to situations is something we learn.
Yeah.
Whether that's through more emotional learnings, whether that's through things we're told, we have patterns that we learn, patterns of thinking, patterns of emotional response. So these are things that we have learned at some point. You know, there may be a few things that are built in.
Yeah.
Like, with fear, we have, I think it's fear of heights and fear of loud noises, I think are two kind of maybe inbuilt kind of fears. But the rest of things we really learn. So at some level, I think, you know, we do learn these things. And more cognitive or behavioural approaches, they look at what's going on more at the moment in terms of, well, what are you saying to yourself? So you mentioned with a more psychodynamic approach, it might be sort of, well, what if there isn't someone to soothe me? Well, you know, that's a thought as well. So how do we deal with that thought? So it's about being aware that, you know, we may have learned that thought in the past, but at the moment it's in the present that it's happening. So what can we do? Can we change that thought? Can we start to kind of challenge it? Or an approach that I find particularly useful is an approach called ACT. And there are other approaches that are similar, where it's about acceptance, it's acceptance and commitment therapy. So the idea is that, you know, we can be aware that we have that thought, but the problem is we start to evaluate it. We start to kind of make meaning from it, as opposed to realizing it's just a thought. It's like one of those thoughts that there are many thoughts in your mind, but it's like what it's about being able to distance yourself, detach from it. So we can just be aware there's thoughts, but without getting too engaged by that thought.
So that's the sort of, you know, we've talked about psychodynamic approaches, CBT, which is the most common one, certainly in the United Kingdom, the most common one approach that you have towards anxiety, particularly if you're in the national health system. We've talked about ACT, which is the sort of a follow-on from CBT. Then other approaches are an existential approach, for example, which would be very interested in looking at, you know, is the anxiety, for example, related to your sense of mortality, the fact that you're going to die one day? Is this something that you might be, you know, might not be aware of, but is that playing into it? Or is your anxiety about not having enough meaning and purpose in life, for example? That could be another way of looking at it. And also the other very common approach that is frequently used is person-centered approach, which is very much concerned with kind of supporting someone in their anxious state. I've got a bit of a cough today. So it would be very much kind of being there, supporting the person in the experience that they have of anxiety. So these are just some really, I mean, it's a hugely simplified version that we're giving you, but it's just to highlight that there are very different ways of approaching anxiety and working with anxiety.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one way that is sometimes used to work with anxiety is with a more behavioral approach is exposure, where, you know, if you went to a behavioral therapist or a cognitive behavioral therapist, say you got anxious about doing presentations, they'd kind of build you up to doing those presentations. So actually facing that, some of that fear, and that fear will tend to, fear will tend to dissipate. It will tend to get less. So with the dentist drill, I mean, I suppose we'd have to sit you in the dentist chair and keep that drill coming until the screaming stops. And then,
well, for example, have the noise in the background. Yeah, we can have a recording of a drill, for example.
Yeah. So, I was talking about flooding, which is where a similar thing where you expose the person to the intensity until the intensity drops, which it does, but it's not a pleasant experience.
No. But it's frequently used, particularly also with fears and phobias, isn't it? With phobias. Yeah, that's often used, that kind of technique, exposure.
Yeah, exposure, definitely. Yeah.
So it's all about sort of, because anxiety is future oriented. Yeah. Anxiety is always focused on what's around the corner. It's always looking ahead. So what we're working with, that's, I think, one of the sort of key points here is to work with it in the here and now, because right now there is no dentist around. There's no one here going anywhere near my teeth. So now is the time where I can manage and work on this anxiety. This is the time, not in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I talked about earlier, is we've evolved with this response. Hmm. And part of the problem is because what happens with our minds is when something happens, or when we're kind of thinking about something might happen, we first of all describe it, then we evaluate that, and then we basically plan. And describing, evaluating, planning works for things in the outside world. It works for things like if you want to build a house. But the problem is we think that we can have the same control over internal events. So, you know, if you don't like something in your room, if you don't like your desk or your picture on the wall, you can just throw it out, because we have control over those things in our life. But things with internal emotions and kind of worries, we try to use that same way of using language and thoughts to control that. But unfortunately, it doesn't tend to work. And so we spend a lot of time actually trying to control the feeling. We spend a lot of time trying to kind of ignore it, or you know, move away from it or avoid it. So it's quite natural that people then try and avoid the thing they're anxious of, which actually will tend to make it worse in the long run.
The longer you avoid it, the bigger it gets.
Yeah, it reinforces it. So it's called negative reinforcement. By avoiding that kind of uncomfortable feeling, we feel better. But the problem is then it generalizes to more and more things. And sometimes something like could start with like presenting to a small group of people. Over time, if we keep avoiding those things, then we start avoiding situations where we might see any people, and we might get stuck at home and not able to go out of the house.
Absolutely. That's the extreme end, isn't it?
And it does happen. So the problem is when we try and control, when we try and avoid, it tends to make these things worse. And I think one of the things as well as in society is we're kind of taught that we shouldn't have bad feelings.
There's very much this sort of absolutely, this idea that I shouldn't feel like this, I shouldn't be anxious.
You know, right, with children, I heard it with my son when he's playing football, with other peer parents shouting to the kids saying, you know, just toughen up, or you know, just don't get worried, don't get anxious. And it's like, well, you can't do that. In fact, when you say don't do something, you think about it.
Absolutely.
So we've kind of thought, well, we're almost conditioned to think we shouldn't feel bad. But actually feeling some negative, what we might call negative emotions.
It's not even negative, it's neither.
Yeah, it's just a label in terms of anxiety. When we label it negative even, that's a judgment in itself. But when we feel these things like anxiety, we think, well, I shouldn't be feeling this. I should be able to control it. But actually anxiety is a completely normal reaction. I think one of the first things is when you have that, it's not trying to think, I need to get rid of this, I need to kind of deal with it. It's being able to accept, actually, this is something that's going on. This is normal.
Yeah. I just experience anxiety and that's it. Yeah. So it's about sort of, it's kind of partly reframed. Well, it's noticing it. It might be also about reframing it. So it's not sort of associating this feeling, the anxious feeling, with terror. Yeah. It's kind of decoupling it from that feeling would be helpful. but just noticing it as it's anxiety and that's all it is. In and of itself, it doesn't do anything. You're not threatened at this point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, and realizing that our thoughts, well, they're just thoughts, they're not reality.
Yeah.
They're things that our mind are creating. And that's easier said than done.
Yeah.
Sometimes adding the words I'm having in front of the thought helps, because it helps to detach. Because the problem with thoughts is, you know, if I think, well, oh, I'm going to make a fool of myself, it's like that thought is the world. It's like we've got this mask on us, which we just are aware that I'm going to make a fool of myself. I'm going to make a fool of myself. And we feel that anxiety.
Mm.
Whereas when we start to think, actually, this is a thought. If I say I'm having the thought that I make a fool of myself, it's like we can detach it a little bit, get some distance from it. We realize it's just like a radio station. Mm. We've got radio stations in the background. Imagine you're in a room with 10 radio stations. Maybe one of them is playing a channel you like. But loads of them are playing stuff that you really don't want to hear. And, you know, you can't turn them off. You just have to sit there and kind of just get on with things. But be aware these are just channels playing, just like the thoughts.
Yeah. And they're there all the time, aren't they? You always have some sort of thought in your head. Unless you are working very hard at meditation and manage to clear your mind. But even then it's difficult. It's impossible,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
there's always something. There's always some chatter.
Yeah.
Going on there.
And to really be effective with this, I mean, it really does help to go and work. If you do have a lot of anxiety, really is useful to go and see a psychotherapist or a counsellor. Because although we talk about these things, it's not easy to do. It does take practice. And having somebody to help you with this can really be the key. You know, exploring maybe where the things do come from. Exploring kind of ways to accept, be able to accept what's going on more easily.
Yeah.
Be able to be more compassionate with yourself. And I think that's the key too, is being compassionate with yourself. Like if you had a friend who was very anxious about something that's coming up, what would you do to them? Would you say, like, no, you just go and sit in the room on your own?
Yeah, don't feel like that.
Yeah, like, don't feel like that. Or would you kind of want to support them? So think of yourself. You know, if you have anxious thoughts, rather than thinking, I shouldn't be feeling this, X, Y, or Z, is thinking, actually, this is okay. I kind of, you know, it's about trying to have some self-soothing.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are lots of different techniques that can be used. And actually, different techniques work for different people. So there isn't a sort of one-way recipe here, I found, that some people really respond well, for example, to self-soothing techniques, saying something soothing to yourself, or actually sort of working with the body where you put one hand, left hand on your belly, left hand on your belly, right hand on your heart, for example. That's something. Try that out and see what that feels like. It's like a sort of self-hug, so to speak. That might be very soothing for some people. Or it might be a visualization, for example. And Tom, you're going to do one later on, yeah? A visualization practice.
Yeah, well, we'll do a brief one because we've been talking for a while. But we're kind of, we'll do a brief
exercise. We'll do a very brief one. Or, of course, anxiety can always be regulated through breathing. You can't be anxious while you're breathing in a very slow and steady rhythm at the same time. It's physically impossible. So that's why breathing is really important to regulate or to manage anxiety. But that's something that you can't just do like at the snip of your fingers. You have to practice it on a more regular basis.
Yeah, and also what's really important is none of these techniques will get rid of that feeling of anxiety.
No.
They might regulate it.
Yeah.
And I think some level we also can't really manage anxiety. We can change the way we experience it. We can lessen the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's learning to accept it. And kind of have compassion towards yourself and maybe kind of look at some of the origins of our response to that so we can kind of work through whatever needs to be worked through so we can respond more differently in the future. But certainly, we can take the edge off. And should we go through this technique now?
Yeah, and then just briefly, wanted to highlight sort of maybe we do that at the end because I also thought it's just briefly coming back to couples because we talked about that. So if there's anxiety in your system, it really requires, if one or both of you, let's say just one of you is very anxious, one of the partners, it really requires some understanding and awareness, first of all, that this is there, that it's part of the experience. And, you know, we've talked about some of the symptoms of anxiety might be irritability, so that might play out in the system. So it's really helpful for the partner of an anxious person to kind of notice, okay, well, this is what it is, to label it, to, you know, to, for both of you to recognize it's anxiety. That doesn't mean to say that, if you are in a relationship with somebody who's anxious, you always have to tolerate it, because it's hard, isn't it, if you work with somebody who's anxious a lot of the time. So there's also an onus maybe for the person who is anxious to address it, to do something about it, to either seek, do some self-help, or to indeed, as we said earlier on, to engage with therapy, because therapy can help definitely in terms of addressing anxiety and lessening it, or learning to accept anxiety, as Tom has said earlier on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that balance between that one partner helping to reassure, helping to listen, helping to be there for the partner, which is really important. And being aware of if you have your own blocks that prevent you from doing that. Do you respond too quickly to your partner's kind of anxiety in terms of, oh, just toughen up and I don't want to hear this? Because if you do that, that's not going to have a positive effect on the other person.
No, and it also is meaning, it's pointless, isn't it?
Yeah. Like
telling someone who's anxious, oh, just don't be anxious, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, and they may need a bit of reassurance, and that's okay from time to time. But if it's all the time, then does this become where, one person becomes like the person who's the saver figure, the person who's trying to save the person.
The rescuer.
The rescuer. And the other person becomes the victim, and you get stuck in this dynamic, which can be quite a thing you want to avoid.
Yeah, it can be quite unhealthy.
Yeah, it can be quite unhealthy.
Okay, so shall we just do one practice exercise?
Yeah, we'll do a little exercise. So again, this is about helping to regulate some of the emotional response. And I think, sometimes we want to think, well, I can manage the response. But again, it comes down to, you can change things in your room and your environment, but it's more difficult to change things inside. So I think also, first of all, don't think this is going to get rid of it. This can help manage it to a level where we think, well, okay, I can still have this feeling and I can get on with the things that are important to me. So it's moving away from the thinking, well, I'd like to do this, but I can't because of the anxiety. It's more, I'd like to do this and I can do it with that feeling at the same time. So that's where we're kind of heading towards. So let's try this out. And first of all, if you're driving or operating the machinery, please don't listen to this bit or stop driving, and you may have somewhere you can relax. And we'll just go on, we'll take this for a few minutes. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes for a moment in just a minute and focus on your breathing, and then we'll do a little visualization. So first of all, make yourself comfortable and make sure that you can sit or lie down somewhere safely. And when you're ready, just sit down, make yourself comfortable, and just take in a deep breath. And as you breathe out, just close your eyes and just focus on your breathing. So as you breathe in, let your rib cage expand, let your chest raise. As you breathe out, your chest lowers, your rib cage lowers. So become aware of the movement in your ribcage, the movement in your chest as you breathe in and as you breathe out. And then tune in to the feelings and sensations in your body. So maybe your feet against the floor or wherever they're resting, your back against the chair. Notice the weight of your shoulders, your arms and your hands. And then put your awareness back into your breath. And see if you can slow that breathing down, because when you slow your breathing down, it tells your body to relax. It helps the parasympathetic nervous system to help your body to slow down. So maybe breathe into a count of three. So one, two, three, and then breathe out to a three. One, two, three. Breathe in, one, two, three, breathe out, one, two, three, breathe in, one, two, three, and breathe out, one, two, three. Good. And now as you continue breathing slowly and comfortably, imagine you could breathe in a soothing colour. So imagine a relaxing, calming, a soothing colour. And if you find it challenging to think of a colour, just imagine relaxation flowing through your body. But as you breathe in, begin to imagine you could let that colour flow through your face. So as you breathe in, that colour or feeling of relaxation can flow around your eyes and your eyelids, letting your eyes relax. And then that colour can flow through your jaw just allowing your jaw to relax, your teeth gently parted. And over the top of your head and down into your neck and shoulders, imagine that colour flows through every muscle, every cell of your body, soothing, relaxing, bathing your body in a blanket of relaxation. And then through your arms to your hands and fingers, relax. Maybe noticing those sensations in your fingers as that colour and relaxation flows through your hands and fingers. And then down through your chest, your shoulders, to your lower back and stomach, relax comfortably, soothed. And then allow that feeling to flow through your legs, your thighs, down through your knees, to your lower legs, feet, and toes, relax comfortably with each breath. Just relax and let go. Notice this feeling in your body of relaxation and calmness. And as you become aware of this feeling of relaxation and calmness, you can almost take like a photo or internal snapshot of this feeling. So you can bring this feeling throughout the day to help you be more calm and relaxed in any situation. So you find that if you could take this feeling with you of calmness, for example, later in the day, when you're with friends, at work, or wherever you are, you can hold on to some of this calmness and feel more calm and comfortable in whatever you're doing. And then take a few breaths, and with each breath, just bring yourself back to the room. So bring your awareness back as you're breathing in, breathe in more energy. So breathe in energy through your feet, your legs, your arms and hands. Your body and your face are breathing more awareness and alertness through your entire body and coming all the way back. Great. So welcome back.
Yeah, that was lovely. I really like these this particular practice. I like the visualization. Works for me. But as we said, you have to experiment and see whether there are other techniques that work more effectively for you. Certainly the breathing is absolutely key.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And working and learning to kind of have a different relationship with your thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So I think we've covered a lot today.
Yeah, and we have. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to round this episode off. And thanks for tuning in. Please subscribe to this podcast so you can hear every podcast. We're going to cover lots of interesting topics over the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. And also recommend it to a friend. Please share this podcast episode.
Yeah, that would be very grateful. And leave us a review if you enjoy this podcast as well. That would be really helpful for us.
Yeah, and as we said, you can get more notes on the relationshipmazepodcast.com website. Mm-hmm. We also have our online course and free resources on our other website, therelationshipmaze.com. And we hope you tune in next week and see you then.
See you then. Take good care. Goodbye for now.
Bye.